Hello and welcome to our monthly webinar. I'm Rabbi Tzvi Goldberg, and I have with me Rabbi David Heber. We're experiencing some technical difficulties today due to the hurricane. Our internet service was down for a couple of days, and then it came back up, and we thought that we would be able to run the program without any glitches, but the Ribbono Shel Olam, God has decided apparently otherwise, and we're having a little bit of technical difficulty. So if you can, the camera is not working apparently, but if you can let me know, if you can chat with me, if you can hear us. But this is what hurricanes can do. And we have Reb Zev Stein working furiously to try to get us working. But meanwhile, the video does not work. It's really just that's what technology is, when we come to rely on it, and then it doesn't work sometimes. So let's start with one topic, Rabbi Heber, that we want to talk about: earthquakes and hurricanes. And I remember we had the earthquake here last week, and one of the first questions we got after that via email was, is there a bracha, blessing, that you say on earthquakes?
Yes, indeed, there is a bracha, and I had the opportunity to make that bracha. We were about to start mincha when the earthquake happened, and someone said something about bracha or something, and I remembered that you're supposed to make a bracha at the time. The bracha for an earthquake is Oisem Maase Bereishis. Which is the same bracha one recites when one sees lightning. In both cases, actually, you don't have a whole lot of time to do it. And in fact, a lot of people that I spoke to missed their opportunity, because you have to either do it during the earthquake, and not everybody has the frame of mind at that point to do it.
That's not the first thing people are thinking about.
Right. Or you have what's called Techdei Dibur, which means the amount of time after the earthquake ends, the amount of time it would take to say Shalom Alecha Rebbe. There's a dispute whether it's Rebbe or Mori, but we hold it Shalom Alecha Rebbe, which is probably about 2 seconds or so. So you have basically the time of the earthquake at about 2 seconds, similar to the halacha of lightning, where also while lightning, as it, you know, when it flashes and you see the light of the emanating from the bolt, or you see the bolt itself, then you recite the bracha Oseh Maase Bereishis. You also only have 2 seconds.
Right, so Oseh Maase Bereishis means who made the works of creation. Is that a good translation?
Right, correct.
So we're trying to say that this is one of the...
We're praising the Ribbono Shel Olam who created such an awesome world, right, in the Maase Bereishis, that you see these types of things that
right,
come out.
As you said before, so you have to realize that it's an earthquake, and have the presence of mind to say this blessing. I had experienced an earthquake previously in California, so I was pretty sure that this was
right.
This was
actually
an earthquake.
I live in California also. I was in the Cuyo, San Diego a number of years back, and the first time there was an earthquake, so I didn't realize that was what was happening.
Right.
Then I said, oh, I missed the bracha. So the Ribbono Shel Olam is mezakeh me in the middle of the night, the opportunity to make the bracha then.
So you did actually say it on the earthquake.
I said it then, and I said it last week. I don't remember if in between.
Last week?
The difference,
okay,
the last week, as I said, someone said bracha, so I was able to say it.
Okay.
The only difference this time was because when you're in California and you feel it, you understand
you know
it's an earthquake
it
here,
right,
because it's so uncommon, you immediately think it's
a train,
a building, a problem, right, with the building. You actually get in a way scareder, because you don't really know what the
right
cause of this is.
So it's not the first thing that comes to mind to say the blessing. Shalom Horowitz, what is the required wind speed in a hurricane to make the bracha? Excellent question. And
Shulchan Aruch doesn't give a number. I was always, my understanding was it has to be something which is first of all, let's step back a second. If you see the wind, like if you see a tornado, where you actually see the wind collection, so to speak, in the twister, so that certainly would be a wind you may
right
recite a bracha on. My understanding is it's lashon of the zaf, which means there's a certain intensity, anger, so to speak, I think it's when it's so windy, a consistent wind, a sustained wind, that there's a noticeable amount of not wind, because we have those in the winter.
Around.
And you know, you ever see the pictures sometimes of those trees that are just look like they're about to be uprooted?
Right.
You know, it's fast. It's probably 60, 70, 80 mile an hour winds.
I would think that
sustained.
He says. Rick says 74 miles an hour is a scientific minimum for a hurricane. There must be some reason why they didn't pick it out of the air. There must be some effect that has at 74 miles an hour to create some danger or something. Why it's considered a hurricane?
Right, you know, correct.
I would think 74 miles an hour is pretty
definitely
serious.
No, that's a hurricane, and that's where well, Tachanei Dibur here is going to be easier than by an earthquake. Unfortunately, it's sustained. So
he asks, is there a bracha for ruach she'ena metsuya, which is a blessing that is. A wind that is uncommon. No, because the wind that is uncommon could be even...
In the winter, you know, we
30,
all have those 40 nice...
40 miles an hour.
We have those windy conditions in the winter all the time. It has to be where the devastation is noticeable, change, and different. Again, I think 74 miles would seem to be certainly enough.
Please note that after the show, we asked Rabbi Heinemann, and his opinion is that in a sustained wind of 35 miles an hour... one could say the bracha of Oseh Maaseh Bereishis. He asks, is there a blessing for a flood?
No.
No, there's no blessing for a flood, for a river that was around since the time of creation.
We're not really so naive.
We don't do that, I'm saying, but technically there could be.
There's no flood, there is no bracha.
But there is no blessing for a flood. I found in a sefer, in one of the books I was looking at, from the Yaivitz, one of the authorities, he says that if a person is in an earthquake and he's looking for something, what we call a segula, how do you translate that? Something spiritual to do that could be helpful in this case. So he says, if you say the following verse, Karazel Zev, Amar Kodesh Kodesh Kodesh, he says, you say that three times, and that would cause the earthquake to settle.
Okay, maybe because it's Kol Rash Gadol.
Kol Rash Gadol, exactly. Right. So, if you can remember that. But certainly the blessing is, if you can remember ready to do these things, you should say the blessing and then run or take precautions that are necessary, like hide under the table or whatever else the authorities would, the local authorities recommend. Okay, a school of the rectification. Thank you. Okay, I want to mention also that this chat box that we're going to be relying on today is you're able to translate into other languages. If you, for instance, you're joining us and your Hebrew is better than your English, the chat box can be translated automatically into Hebrew. Okay, so let's move on to some other topics that we have over here, Rabbi Heber. One thing that people were worried about, and it actually did happen in some cases, that the power goes out and they're cooking their chulent, and then the chulent, there's no power to the crock pot, and then it comes back an hour later or whatever, and you want to eat the chulent, but you don't know if that's permitted, because it's maybe similar to having a non-Jew turn on your crock pot, which is a problem. So we discussed that.
Right, so here you're dealing with several issues, halachic issues really coming from different angles. The first is probably the easier one to deal with. There's a halacha that if a Gentile does work directly for a Jew on Shabbos, then you're not allowed to get hanoah, which means you're not allowed to derive benefit from the action of the Gentiles. For example, if you were at Friday night, your fuse blew in your home, or your circuit breaker, the whole house is pitch black. Mm-hmm. If a Gentile were to come and turn the light on his own, without even you hinting, even certainly if you hinted, you're not allowed to derive benefit from that. You cannot stay in that house and eat there or read there. You could stay home to go to sleep, because you could do that in the dark, but mm-hmm. you can't you cannot derive benefit from the action of a guy. The concept of a hinting to a Gentile, which we have, or classically known as the Shabbos guy.
My that's where you have a different situation. Like, my light is on and I can't sleep.
That's one case. Or you had an indirect benefit. For example,
that is an indirect
during
benefit.
The day, that's indirect.
Yeah,
or
turning off the light.
Right. Or if, let's say, it's Shabbos day and you have light coming in. Let's say right now, you know, we could, the room we're in, or anybody out there, if you're in a room with windows, so you could stay in that room, right? It's just not so pleasant to stay in the room.
Mm-hmm.
You want much more light, so you would hint to the guy, you would hint to the Gentile, come in and turn the lights on. You could stay in that room because you could have stayed in there without the action of the
right.
guy. He's just making it much, much nicer that you have the light on. Okay,
mm-hmm.
With that said, the first question we've got to ask ourselves is that you have a Gentile a worker who's coming around for the electric company, and he's working on your light. So in that case, we don't have a problem with that. In other words, even if it would be a Friday night, you have no electricity, you know, it goes off at 10 o'clock at night in the middle of a hurricane, and then if you're one of the lucky ones, within 3 hours, they've come around your neighborhood, and they've fixed it, and now the light goes on. Can you get the benefit from that light when it goes on? The answer is yes. Because number one is that the Gentile didn't do it for you. The Gentile did it for the whole neighborhood, and
right.
and you got to, you know, you fix
right.
one line, and now everything's
right.
fixed. So we say Rive. Most people are Gentile, and that's who
they're doing it
for.
Everybody, right.
And therefore, it's for everybody. Now, one may ask the following question: what if you're in a neighborhood? What if your block is off, and
mm-hmm.
And now everybody on that block are Yidden, right?
Mm-hmm.
We live in neighborhoods with many Jews. So now, when they come to your street, which is...
They're doing it just for you.
They're doing it just for your street. Now
right.
they're doing it for Jews. It's still permissible, because they're really doing it for themselves, because they have a requirement to report, you know, how many out on the radio. They're announcing, you know, so many people are out of electricity. It's in the interest of the electric company to get as many fixed as possible. So you, if you go to them and say, listen, we don't want ours fixed till after Shabbos. They want it fixed now, because they want to, you know, when they report the news, they want that number to be as low as possible. And therefore, they're doing, it's called the...
they're saying you're doing it for themselves.
Correct. So that's not a problem. The next issue is, what about the actual cooking, though, of your chalent? You maybe have a Bishul Akum problem, or you have other issues of cooking, of chazara, and, you know,
right.
all that whole issue of there. So there, basically, is, as long as it's
a third cooked
already,
then we allow it.
It's not a problem. So bottom line is, if you put the chalent up and it's raw, and Shabbos began, and you had a pretty much raw chalent Friday night, and it goes out, you might have a problem, and especially if it cooled down, you might have a problem.
Right. Most people have the chalent cooked up before
Correct.
Shabbos, so it's, practically speaking, it's a very
typically not going to be
not going to be a problem. So the bottom line is, if your power goes out and then comes back on Shabbos, you don't have any real
typically except on the rare cases.
Most of the time, you wouldn't have a problem with your food. Now, somebody asked me that they have a home where they have known to be a problem. They have leaks in their roof. They know this to be a problem from before, so they only thinking that it could get worse during the hurricane. So they wanted to know if you can take a bucket and put that bucket underneath the leaks, because it's a question brought down in the Shulchan Aruch, in the Gemara, that it says that you're not allowed to take a bucket and put it underneath a dripping roof, because the water in the bucket is not usable, and since the water is not usable, the bucket becomes unusable for that period of time, and that's a problem called mevata kli mehechano. It's a long discussion of what exactly the issue is. Is it binyan? Is it stira? But you're not allowed to do that. So the question is: does that apply to our homes and our leaks? And so
here it's water. So there's a lengthy Bir Halacha. The Chafetz Chaim in the Shabura, in the Bir Halacha, speaks about this exact case. The consensus seems to be that Bishas Hadchak, if it's a difficult situation that a person is in, especially if they have a major leak that's going to do major damage, or not only the damage, you're going to have water all over the place. So we allow that changing of the water.
I think it also depends on whether or not the water is usable. But in other words, the distinction that
if it's usable, it's not mukhsa to start with.
Right,
you don't have a problem.
Right, so
typically, though, the dlaf, which is the dripping water,
would
is
be unusable.
Not
is
so
it,
usable because it's gone through the plaster of your house and it's dirt.
So it doesn't have to actually be drinkable for a person, even if you have an animal, like here, in Baltimore anyway, there's a lot of dogs, cats all around. If that water would be usable for them to drink, then it wouldn't be mukta at all. You don't even get involved in the question.
That's correct. Where you have just water, someone had a leak in a way that the water comes in drinkable, certainly permissible. The question is where the water is dirty.
Where the water is dirty, uh-huh. So you're saying even in that case, it's mutter,
if there's no other choice.
That's the berlacha. Okay, that's good to know. The other question someone asked me was, if here in Baltimore it's notorious to have water in the basement. There's a very high water table, and as soon as it rains and hurricanes, then people have water flooding into their basements. So they wanted to be able to bucket that out on Shabbos, because otherwise it damages the basement and the equipment and the appliances that are down there. That's not so simple, because over there also,
maybe some other issues there.
There's other issues.
So simple, but
because it's a tircha, it's a difficult job. It's very tiring to sit there and bucket the water. Also, the water there is more likely to be unusable because it's coming from the ground, from the ground.
Ultimately, there might be, we want to consult with the Rav depending on the needs, because there's another issue here. This I've used at times. There's a Amir La'akum asking a guy to do something where you're going to have a loss of Svarim. It's permissible. Or Sefer Kodesh, holy books.
Well, you can ask.
So if you're in a basement and you have a flood and there's Svarim down there,
right.
So not always so practical that out. You know how high you have shelves. You don't know how high it's going to go. You can ask a guy straight away to do malacha, which means the guy could come and turn on your sump pump. The guy could come and do whatever is necessary because you're trying to save the Sefer Kodesh.
Well, I would think that might be. You're saying that's not okay if it's just. It's only all right if you're trying to save Sfarim, but not if you're trying to save.
Well, then you get Tamir Lakum. You know, it's just to turn it on. Maybe Amir Lakum issues. Certainly, if we consider the action of the Raisa, which it might be with the pump and so on.
So if your non-Jewish neighbor is willing to come and bucket it out.
Comes on his own, no problem. If the person comes on his own, certainly no problem.
No, but if you tell him, I have a problem in my basement, I can't use a...
You don't say it like that. Well, what you do is you say, my basement's flooded. And they say, well, don't you have a sump pump? He says, yeah, but it's uh-huh. Sabbath. And if you have the neighbor, they'll know exactly what you need.
Right.
They'll say next session will be, where's the switch?
Can one turn on a pump before Shabbos?
Yeah, that should be fine. Even though we typically don't keep on electrical things that are not typically run, but in such a case it would not be a problem.
What's the problem? I mean, turning it on, right? Like Rick says, the sump pump is not on all the time. It's only activated when it reaches a certain height.
Right. So that's on. That would
be okay.
Because you can't turn on a vacuum cleaner in your house. It's called
Avshamilsa.
It's not a pleasant thing. That's because vacuum cleaners don't run typically in homes on Shabbos. And when they're running, it means somebody has them running. It's a Zolzal Shabbos. It's not pleasant. But if it's something that the derech is to go on, like an alarm clock, or for that matter, a fax machine, which goes on by itself, certainly a sump pump, which goes on by itself, it's not a problem.
Mm-hmm. I just want to mention that we are here at the Star K in Baltimore. I'm Rabbi Tzvi Goldberg, and with me is Rabbi David Heber. We're very sorry that our systems are not working to optimum. Our video is down, and our internet in our office is down, and we're doing some sort of connection that I'm not sure is really working 100%, but we're doing the best we can, and we appreciate your patience. Some of the questions here that we had before, Rabbi Heber, does the chalent still have to be warm? Going back to the chalent question, if the power goes out and then comes back on.
If you don't do anything with it, I don't think that's a problem. If it goes on all by itself.
Does the chalent still have to be warm? I wouldn't think so either. I'm not so sure it's safe to eat if the chalent cooled off and then you're heating it up again. That you have to figure out. Another question, are you allowed to say a bracha of a thunder lightning early morning before Birchas HaTorah?
No problem.
I don't see why not.
No problem. The real question is, could you make a bracha? This actually I looked up in California when I missed Isamasa Bereshis and I was anticipating a aftershock. Can you make the bracha before Negelwasser? Four brachos of Torah is not a problem because you're not learning when you say that.
How are you going to make the bracha in the middle of the night? You mean
in the middle of the night? In other words, all of a sudden you feel an earthquake.
Your hands need to be typically in the morning or every morning. A person washes his hand before saying any blessings. So the question is whether or not you wake up in the middle of the night.
Right. If you get up to wash your hands, time's up.
So doesn't the Mishnah Berurah says you just wipe your hands?
Rav Chaim in the Ketzayis HaShulchan is lenient. It says, of course, there's two issues. If a person has a major urge to use the bathroom, then they would not be allowed to recite the bracha. Either way, but if that's not the case, then we say l'halacha, which means according to the letter of the law, you do not have to wash nagel maser. You don't have to wash your hands before.
Don't you have to like wipe your hands
on the? Well, I don't have time for that either. I don't know if he says that. He brings
time,
the proof.
By the time you finish doing that,
you know, he brings the proof.
Late.
Very interesting. There's a Gemara in Brachas that tells us that originally the Brachas HaShachar, the blessings of the morning, were made at each event. You opened your eyes, you said Pakeach Ivrim, and you got up, you said Matir Surim, Zakeh Kufim, and so on. You put on shoes, you know, every step of the way. Some of that seemed to have been done before they washed Nagel Maser. If you really, you
step
know,
on the ground.
Because it says, right. I open my eyes, I pekeach imrim. If I haven't opened my eyes yet, I haven't washed nagel maser yet. So our custom nowadays is to wait to say those blessings until we say them in one shot after we wash nagel maser and typically when we come to shul. But you see that midini the Gemara, which means according to the letter of the law of the Gemara, you don't have to have nagel maser. So in a case like an earthquake where you're not going to have another chance, then the halacha is you could say the bracha even. That's what happened. Mm-hmm. We had the aftershock, I made the bracha.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now we actually have here. I want to go through some of these guidelines from Rabbi Heinemann that he was asked by the Agudas Israel to put together halachic guidelines for hurricanes.
Because this is in Florida, which is common.
This was done originally for Florida, right? So let's go through some of these questions and answers. In case of an impending hurricane predicted to hit on Shabbos, may one leave the radio on? You know, you need the radio to get information or evacuation information or safety information. So behind my answer, yes, leave the radio on in a private area on a low volume.
Right, that's the consensus of the Paiskim because you're not really... Right. The only issue of radio is option milsa, which is not... It's not pleasant to have a radio running, and certainly here in a need where, you know, your life could be in danger to a certain extent, you need instructions. It's permissible, and again, Rabbi Heinemann is writing, put in a private place to avoid less option milsa. You know, you don't want it blaring.
Right. It's obvious that you shouldn't be listening to it unless you think
necessary.
Something. Right. Unless,
right.
Like, from time to time, you could go and hear if something's happening,
go,
but not
at the top of the hour to hear the latest.
Right. Right. But you wouldn't want to be listening to the talk shows on Shabbos.
Right.
I read that Rabbi Forsheimer in Lakewood also publicized this ruling, and he allowed them to leave it on. I think there's a Jewish radio station there.
Yes.
that wasn't having anything all Shabbos. Just if there would be an emergency, they would broadcast, right? And in Israel, this is very common because with rockets that people there's a special channel there that they leave it on. Okay, if told to evacuate, what should one do?
Move fast.
Okay.
Even on Shabbos, you can be Michal Shabbos.
Do whatever you have to do to protect your life.
You know, essentially, I was listening to a discussion of an area that was hit by a hurricane. I think in Vermont, they said a term of discussion was like war zone. It was the same concept. You have people who are secluded, isolated, no supplies, a dangerous situation.
Right.
In a way, it's like a war zone to a certain extent, with of course where the danger, similar potential dangers. I'm just thinking. A hurricane is like a war zone from Hilchos Shabbos. Just like Hilchos Shabbos, one is allowed to leave. If impending danger, people in Europe during World War II, we know of stories where people were Michal Shabbos because that was the only opportunity to save their lives. 100% permissible. This is no different.
The thing about hurricanes, though, this kind of danger, they can predict it, or at least they have an idea that there's going to be a problem a few days before. So if you can get out before Shabbos, if you think there might be an evacuation, so...
It would depend. In other words, if there's like a small chance that this is the case, then...
Then you probably would stay.
Then you're obligated.
Right.
But if it's like, okay, everyone needs to be up by 6 a.m. Saturday morning, that's what the authorities say,
right.
Then in that case, and now it's Friday morning at 8 a.m., there's no hetzer to say, you know, I lie with my suit of Shabbos Friday night at home, and then we'll go. You shouldn't do that.
Okay. If instructed to bring indoors all loose furniture and garden equipment, is one allowed to? In other words, the hurricane, the heavy winds will blow around these things, whatever shovels you have outside.
Correct. I mean, here again, it's similar where most of the time that's known a day or two in advance.
Right.
It's rare.
You should be able to bring that in.
But if you didn't do it, you certainly could do it on Shabbos. But again, usually these announcements by Thursday night, Friday morning, you'll know that there's a chance. You should put away your items in advance.
Right. And we should point out that there's also a difference between what type of item it is. Let's say it's a chair that's outside. I mean, a chair is not muksa. Doesn't cause any. There's no Shabbos problem at all.
Except if it's soft. There's no Erev.
There's no Erev. Okay. But let's say it's on your porch and you. Whatever. If it's,
right, correct.
Right,
then
okay.
Then generally, then it's
wouldn't
no problem.
It wouldn't be muksa, but something like a shovel. That's where you could have the question, and if it's protect, right. If it's to protect people's safety, then you would be allowed to bring it in. If it was only to protect property, then you would not be allowed to bring it in.
Right.
If it would fly around harmlessly, which I don't know how you could know that's going to happen.
Depends, I guess, on the wind speed of the wind.
If someone sees a power line fall and it poses a danger, can one contact the authorities?
So again, if it's dangerous and potentially it's a danger in an area where somebody could, God forbid, come in contact with it and become harmed, or God forbid, it could be fatal, these things, then it's certainly
right.
Permissible to call.
Right. Okay, we have a question over here. Let's see. Nassau County announced mandatory evacuations on Shabbos. Okay, that is a real dilemma.
So then that means typically... The evacuations are because there's a potential for a loss of life,
right?
And therefore, it's a suffix sakana, so you could go.
But if I'm not mistaken, they had some voluntary or some recommended evacuation on Friday also.
Right. So again, if Friday's involuntary, then it would be advisable to go earlier. But again, you have a case where they didn't realize the intensity of it, and now it's Friday. Mm-hmm. And they're evacuating, so it would be permissible to evacuate. Here we would say a rule of what's called machil leisak kalakal, which means take the lighter of the methods, which means if you have a neighbor who's a Gentile and it's, let's say, a husband and wife, and it's just you and your wife, and you just need to get to New Jersey,
get a ride
out of harm's way, ask him for a ride and go.
Mm-hmm.
This way, you're not actually being machal Shabbos. In fact, I was discussing with my children. If they would announce an evacuation, if public transportation was running, although I don't know if it does, but by evacuations, I guess it has to, because there's people who don't own automobiles. So how do you evacuate people who have homes or who are homeless and who don't have a mode of transportation? I would assume the bus lines and the trains are running.
I don't know if that's true, because in New York they stopped all the...
That was subway. When it was about to start. The subways stopped at noon on Shabbos.
Mm-hmm.
But it was people could have evacuated before that. So I was telling my kids Friday night, you know, which I would get on the city bus. I would take money, which is only Darbonon, Muksa, and Haitzah is only Darbonon. And I would take this bus line, which would take me to the light rail. Light rail would take me to downtown Baltimore. I would then get on a Greyhound bus, you know, west to Pittsburgh. And that's how I would do it. Assuming they're running. I don't know if I would find all that out.
Is that because you've never been to Pittsburgh? That's why you chose
that? My grandparents used to live in Pittsburgh. So when I get there, I'll know my way around, Forbes and all the main streets over there.
In Israel, Michael asks, in Israel, where most of the electric company's workers are Jewish, would it be mutter to use the electricity after they fix it on Shabbos? If not, what is one to do? Well, you actually have a problem every Shabbos, even if they don't fix it, even if there wasn't a power outage, because they're always working on the power in
right.
Israel.
Yes, I don't know.
That gets into the people in Bnei Brak who use generators every Shabbos.
Right.
And that's the question. Those people who do use power, I think the logic is because the electric company, which is run mostly by Jews, needs to have power for emergency situations like hospitals, army, so again, they're not necessarily doing it, they need to do it anyway.
Right, I guess the question here would be is if they fix your street, in other words, when there's
right.
a hospital.
That would be a serious, right, if
correct.
They fix your neighborhood, you live in you live in Beitar,
right?
And it's all, you know, there is no hospital in Beitar, so that would be a real problem. If one has a generator running on Shabbos, how does one keep it fueled? Okay, I'm not that familiar with the.
I'm not so familiar with it either. But you can't. You have to fill it with gasoline. You would not be allowed to add gasoline.
Can a goy do that for you?
It burns it, right? So you cannot put. Certainly cannot put the.
What if the goy is also being supplied by the generator?
It would get into this issue of direct hana benefit and what's. Could you ask a Gentile? It would depend. Various factors. That's a short answer.
Is the noise issue a factor? Meaning that's the afshemil, so the factor that makes noise.
A generator, you mean?
A generator. I think people know that it kicks in automatically. I don't think people would think that you turned it on Shabbos.
We had a lot of people in my neighborhood with generators on.
What's that, Zev?
We had a lot of people with generators running in my neighborhood.
Yeah, a lot of people said, don't they go on automatically?
No. You have to put them on in the first place, and then you have to refill it with gas every many hours.
There are reasons to be lenient by the noise issue for generators. Okay, let's just go through some more of these questions that Rabbi Heinemann answered. At what wind velocity should the Erev not be assumed to be kosher? So Rabbi Heinemann says, once the winds reach speeds of 35 miles an hour, one should assume the Erev is not kosher and should not carry outside.
One has to ask themselves, an Erev we use, there's a concept of chazaka very often, which means Shabbos morning, if you want to use the Erev, you know, no one's checked it since yesterday, it's permissible. The careful and prudent thing is such a wind means that there's a good chance it's down. So, you know, that privilege that you get every other week is really, you don't have anymore.
It also depends on if you're familiar with the Erev, it depends what the Erev is made up of. If the Erev is just poles and just strings, well, that can come down even if there's not a strong wind, just a little branch will hit
correct.
It.
But you have to assume
it will come
not,
down.
So we assume
but if you have an Erev that's made up of, some Erevs are much more stronger than that they're made up of telephone wires
and poles.
And the poles, the city electric poles, and also they may use mountains and ditches and things like that. Those are not really susceptible
so much
to a problem. So if you are more familiar with how your Erev is made up, then you can be more confident in using it during a storm. Okay, we have some discussion here about what's the best way to get your generator to work. Okay. Honestly, I'm not really that familiar personally with the generators. I don't have one, but I've been thinking very strongly of getting one because in Baltimore,
now the time for best sale.
We do have a major problem with power, even when there's no hurricanes. Okay, I think we'll stop here. I want to thank everybody very much for joining us. Thank you, Rabbi Heber, for being with us again. I want to apologize, but this is what happens when this is the least of it. People are much more inconvenienced. People without power for a couple of days, people who...
Hopefully these halachas should be halacha v'lo l'maisa.
Right.
You shouldn't need to come on to them.
Right.
Have
we
a great day.
If anybody wants to ask us any questions, you can email us at star-k@star-k.org. And our phone number is 410-484-4110. We look forward to you joining us next month, the last Wednesday of every month at noon. And by then, we certainly hope that everything will be running in tip-top shape. Thanks very much. Take care. Have a good day.